Thanks to Weebly for supporting the Productivity Show. Weebly is more than a beautiful website builder. It's an all-in-one platform for artists and entrepreneurs who want to sell their products, build their brand, and create successful online businesses. Go to weebly.com/TPS to get 15% off your first purchase. Welcome to The Productivity Show, the Asian efficiency podcast dedicated to helping you make the most of your time, attention, energy, and focus. Do you ever find yourself frustrated because the day has just gotten away from you? If so, I've got good news for you. There are things you can do to set yourself up for a successful and productive day. Today, I'm joined by writer, author, and podcaster Dave Kalo. Dave was the managing editor at the unofficial Apple weblog for 8 years, where he covered major Apple releases, reviewed software and hardware, interviewed developers, produced podcasts and video, and oversaw the site's day-to-day editorial operations. He's a regular contributor to Unclutterer, a website dedicated to home and office organization, and he's created a few video courses for the Dojo, our online productivity community. Dave's latest video course is all about setting your day up for success. So in this episode, we dive deep on specific things that you can do the night before to make sure tomorrow is productive. We talk about how to get your day started right with a solid morning routine. And we share what you can do to overcome a midday slump. There's a bunch more in the Dojo video course. And if you want to know how you can get it for only $1, stay tuned until the end of the show. You can find links to everything that we share in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/196. And now, on with the show. Dave Kalo, welcome to The Productivity Show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, I should say welcome back to The Productivity Show because you've been on a couple different episodes and you've done a couple different video courses for The Dojo, which is our online productivity community. And so today we're going to be talking about your latest one, which is one that I'm very excited about. I can't wait for our Dojo members to get access to this. And we're going to be talking about setting up your day for success. Now, there's a couple different videos here, and I've kind of broken down the show outline here based on the natural breaking points. So we're going to talk about a couple different things here, things you can do the night before. I think this is where a lot of the value is going to lie. If you're going to implement something right away, that's probably where you want to start. And then we're going to talk about productive mornings, overcoming a midday slump, and then what you can do at the end of your day. Sound good?
Sounds good to me.
All right, so let's dive in here and let's talk about how a productive day begins the night before. Now, there's a bunch of different things that we can do to make sure that our day is going to be awesome, but why don't we tackle these one by one?
So the first thing that I'm going to say is kind of obvious, but it absolutely deserves time and attention, and that is getting enough sleep. I know when you're in that productive mode, or maybe you're a freelancer, or maybe you're getting something, a project off the ground, perhaps you've got a side gig, the tendency is to put in those, you know, midnight oil hours and really, you know, get in as much productive or billable time as you can. And I understand the draw of that. I've been succumbed to it myself, but really getting enough sleep is probably the most important thing you can do to get you through the next day where you have to be productive all day long.
Yeah, absolutely. I forget which fable it was where you have to protect the goose that lays the golden eggs.
Yeah, right,
and that's exactly what sleep is. You know, if your body can't function at peak levels, then it doesn't matter how many hours you're putting in because you're making everything harder. I've actually got on my calendar, I've got a separate calendar called Goose, which is literally self-care things to make sure that I have time to go to the gym or go for a run, stuff like that. So sleep is definitely in that category. And it sounds really simple, but you know, the I had somebody say it this way the other day. They said, I wanted to start getting up earlier, so I did something really radical. I started going to bed earlier.
Well, that's a new technique.
Yeah. And it's hard because there's always one more thing you can do, like you said, but you really do have to just say, okay, I'm going to pause this for now and I'm going to worry about it tomorrow. I'm going to make sure that I put myself in the best position to be successful, and that's by getting enough sleep.
Yeah, it really is. And there really is always one more thing you can do. And something that really bothered me for a while is if I felt like I'm wasting a productive time. If I'm just winding down or I'm going to bed, oh, I could be working right now. It took a while and it took a few tired days for me to realize that I was actually doing myself a disservice to push myself to work later and later. And eventually you'll get to the point where you know, if I'm not in bed by X, I'm going to be a wreck the next day. So when you've solved for X, if you will, stick to it.
Yeah, that's great advice. Number two is practice gratitude. I'm interested to get your take on this. We've got a whole podcast devoted to this particular episode or this particular topic. Episode 175, we talked about positive energy. So why don't you talk to us about how we can practice gratitude and what benefit that has on our productivity the next day?
It really is a huge topic, and I'll try to be brief, and everyone should go and listen to that episode that's about this practice specifically. But there's a few reasons to do this. The main reason I do it is I had a tendency to look at my to-do list at the end of the day and notice the things I did not check off, and I'd feel badly about those. Or I'd think, oh, I wanted to make X progress on my side gig today, but that didn't happen. And that could be demoralizing if it happens two or three or four days in a row. Instead, I started to practice on the wins, no matter how small they were. Like, I called the garage and scheduled the brake appointment for the car, as opposed to I landed the client I've been pursuing for months. All of those things are wins. And when you recognize them, formally recognize them by taking 10 minutes at the end of the day, perhaps writing them down, maybe you have a journal going, and other things that you mentioned back in that episode of the podcast, it really builds that momentum of, wow, I'm succeeding, I'm doing well, and I can continue to do so.
Yeah, and especially I think if you are not, like, you can definitely apply gratitude to your tasks and the things that you got done.
Yeah.
But you can also apply it to the people that are in your life, whether you have a significant other or a family. I would say that the people that you surround yourself with, whether intentionally or unintentionally, I guess, they have a big impact on your productivity. And it doesn't really matter. You know, if you're talking about how do I make tomorrow better, it doesn't really matter how things got the way they are right now. Mm-hmm. But if you want to make them better, and if you make them better, you're going to be more productive, everything is going to be easier, then you can choose today to express gratitude to the people that are in your life. I've done this with my wife, and I can tell you it's magical.
Yeah, it really is. That's a great point. Not only do this to recognize the tasks, but the people around you. That's a great practice to make into a habit.
Right. So what's number three?
Number three is what I call closing up shop. So at the end of your workday, there's a few things you can do to give yourself the sense of my workday is over and really closing, you know, flipping the open sign to closed, if you will. The first is disconnecting. This is something that I do. I usually arrive home from my day job around 4:30, and I'll put my phone in its cradle up on the second floor of the house, so it's not even near me, and I sort of leave it alone. I don't look at email anymore, and I don't check social channels anymore, because now's the time that that stuff is done, and I'm able to hang out with my family. Before I leave work, I always say proper goodbyes. Now, when you think about it, when you show up at work, no matter where you work in the morning, you probably say hello or good morning to some of your colleagues or coworkers. I do that too. I think it's just as important and polite, really, to say goodbye to folks at the end of the day. Just stop by at their desks, say have a good night, I'll see you tomorrow morning. It's polite and courteous. It allows you to acknowledge the people you work with, especially those great people in your life, like you mentioned earlier. But it also gives you a sense of the workday is done. And finally, this kind of touches on what we just said, review what went well. That email exchange was great. My discussion with this client was great. Or whatever else went really well during the day that you can acknowledge formally and feel good about.
Yeah, I really like the idea here of the saying proper goodbyes. I've noticed this when I worked in an office environment that the tendency, even if you are in an office environment, and even if you spend all day around the same people, is that you just come in, you do your thing, especially if you're introverted like I am, and you just kind of like slip out the back door without saying goodbye. And I noticed, like, I forget where I heard about it at first, but I heard somebody talk about how, like, if you go out of your way to say hello and say goodbye to people, like that'll drastically change the atmosphere of your workplace. And I thought to myself, nah, I really can't be that effective. Mm. But I started doing it and it was amazing. You know, even the people who were more introverted than I was, a lot of the developers, for example, I noticed that they started opening up, and every interaction I had with them, all the other work I had to do with them throughout the rest of the day got a lot easier because I took, you know, it really doesn't cost me that much. I got to walk right by their desk anyways. Just open up your mouth and say goodbye.
Easy enough to do. And like you said, potentially some big rewards.
Yeah. Now it's a little bit harder now, I guess, when I work remotely and a lot of the people that I work with are not in the same location. I guess, you know, maybe I've fallen into that trap again, but the tendency now is like everybody's online. We use HipChat at Asian Efficiency. Other people might use something like Slack. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you see, you hear the sound that somebody logged off and you see the circle disappears. What's your perspective on this principle working remotely? Is this something that you would still recommend that people do using virtual tools, or is it not as important?
Well, it is a little different since you aren't face-to-face and you might never see your colleagues face-to-face, or at least some of them. When I was at AOL, we were in IRC all day, not to date myself, but the rule was if you were at work, you were logged into IRC so we could all communicate with each other. And when your shift was over, you would log out. And yeah, I noticed that sometimes too. Someone would just disappear and that's perfectly fine. But again, it only takes a second to say, well, folks, I'm off. See you tomorrow. And it's a little common courtesy thing that I kind of like. Maybe I'm just hokey that way.
No, I think it is important. And it also could be more important based on how your team works. Because if everybody is in the same location or time zone, maybe, you know, you're about to log off and it's a way for other people to know, like if they need your feedback on something really quick, that they should get that from you before you turn your instant messenger client off.
Yeah, that's a great point.
if you have people on the other side of the world where you're working while they're sleeping and vice versa, maybe that's not such a big deal. But when you're trying to collaborate using Scrum, for example, like that's all methodology is built on the idea of collaboration. So I know I've been in that situation where it's like, oh, I was just about to send this person this thing to get their okay on it. Now they're gone. What do I do?
Yeah, right. Now what do? I have to wait and figure it out.
Yep. Wait till tomorrow. Yeah. Number four is identify your MITs for the next day. And this is interesting. And one of those things that you probably don't think really is that important, but why don't you talk to us about why it is?
Sure. Well, I'm sure some of your listeners know that MIT stands for Most Important Tasks. To me, these are the things that must get done tomorrow. No questions asked. It isn't something I can't put off for whatever reason. Now, I started identifying my MITs the night before to combat the situation where I sit down at my desk in the morning. I know all these things that are open and I ask myself, where do I start? Or what do I do next? And that would inevitably force me to waste some time as I evaluate, ooh, this can wait till after lunch, or this can wait till tomorrow, and this I really need to address right now because it's high priority. And I've wasted maybe 15, 20 minutes trying to do that sort of triage right then and there. But when I do it at the end of the day with tomorrow morning in mind, I found it really, really helpful. A trick I learned from Sean Blanc was to, once you've identified those MITs, maybe three or four or five, don't go crazy, write them down. I put them on a little 3x5 index card and I place it right in front of my keyboard so I see it first thing in the morning. So when I do sit down to work, I know exactly where I should begin and I can just get right to it.
Yeah, that's a great tip. And it's something that I've started doing as well. I actually went through a Mac productivity course by Bob Levitis, I believe is how you say his name.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Working Efficiently for Mac Users or something like that. And the gist of the course is mainly how to be more productive with your Apple tech. But he kept referring to this thing that he created called Superplan, which was basically just this printable sheet that had his MITs and then time blocking. So like how he was going to spend every hour of his day, and then some room for notes and things like that. And I thought to myself, you know, if Bob Levitis can do this, I can do this and I should create my own template. So I did that. I've got on the left side, you know, hour by hour, and I chunk my time. And then I've got on the right hand side, my goals. So I use the 12-week year methodology, and I've got three goals that I want to accomplish this quarter. So I write those out every single day. And then I've got space for up to five MITs. And that's Asian Efficiency recommends that you do 3 to 5. And I agree with that. If you go more than five, then my experience, you're never going to get everything done. And if you can't get everything done, if you can't execute on your plan, you tend to not believe that it's achievable, and that zaps your motivation. It's a vicious cycle. But yeah, great tip for writing them down the night before. And all I can really say is try it for yourself. Because if you're skeptical like I was that this is really going to increase your motivation that much, you'll be amazed. Just thinking about the things that you have to do the day of, it's amazing how much time you can waste if you're looking for a reason to procrastinate at your job. And that's that's a quote unquote legitimate way to do it. If you really want to be productive, though, and you want to be effective, you want to hit the mark, you want to get things done, then spend just 5-10 minutes the night before, and you'll save yourself an hour or more the next day.
Yeah, and this could be a real sort of relaxed part of your evening, too. Make some tea, put some music on, have a mindless TV in the background if you can work that way. This isn't something that requires a whole lot of brain power, so it's great for the end of the day when you're sort of spent and tired from all day long. And you feel good that, all right, I'm going to wake up in the morning prepped and ready.
Awesome. Number five, speaking of waking up prepped and ready, is prep your gear. Why don't you talk to us about that?
Sure. I'm big on prepping your gear, and it can be all sorts of things depending on the work you do. If you're a writer, if you're a photographer, if you're an artist, whatever you are, there are certain tools, and I refer to both digital and, you know, physical tools that you're going to need to get your work done. And you know, tomorrow I have this and this and this MIT looming, and for that I'm going to need my laptop, my camera, whatever it is. I like to find those things ahead of time, make sure they're ready to go, they're charged up, or they're in good working order, or the memory card is inside and has plenty of free space, all the night before. So again, it's one less thing for me to have to worry about or even do in the morning when I'm trying to get down to business.
Yeah, exactly. One version of this that I've implemented recently is I've got AirPods, which are great because I have meetings some days, you know, all day. We have an episode recorded where we talk about how we batch all of our meetings now on meeting days. But because we're a remote team, you know, we're on Skype, or now it's Zoom for on Wednesdays particular, almost all day. And I make sure that my AirPod case is charged the night before, because I've definitely gotten in the middle of a meeting and my AirPods are dying, and I plug them into the case, and normally they recharge in just a couple of minutes and I'm good to go again. And the battery's dead, and now I got to scramble to find my my headphones, plug them in. It's a pain. I know it's a first world problems, but it really does make your job a whole lot easier when you just think through what are the things that could potentially go wrong because my batteries aren't charged, and then creating a simple checklist and making sure that those are topped off the night before.
Yeah, and I do this with my kids as well. When I say, you know, tomorrow's school, what do you need? I need my bag, I need my lunch, this project needs to be handed in, all that sort of thing. When you get it done the night before, it makes for such a stress-free morning.
Yeah, another thing that I'll add here, and this is something I picked up from Sean Block, was getting your clothes prepped the night before. I never really, again, one of those things that I never really thought that this made that big of a difference until I find myself standing in my closet going, I don't even care, but I don't know what to wear. And I found that simply by getting my clothes out and putting them in we've got a master bathroom. So I've got a special place inside the closet door, basically, where I will hang them and they are ready to go for the next morning. Now, when I wake up, I know I can just go through my morning routine. I can shower. My clothes are right there. Sounds really stupid, but it saves me a bunch of time. And more importantly, it's a bunch of decisions that I don't have to make at the beginning of my day when my willpower is maximum. I've got the most energy, mental resources to throw at my most important tasks and make progress on some big projects. I'm able to sit down and get to work as quickly as possible.
Yeah, this might be my favorite point. I can go on and on about this because I really love doing prep the night before, not only but professionally, but everything. I don't want to have a stressful morning. And like you said, that's when I'm most ready to work. And I don't want to spend some of that valuable creative energy on something as silly as what shirt should I pick out?
Right. Number six is look at your calendar. Now, I mentioned the Golden Goose calendar that I created previously, and we've got a link we'll put in the show notes on an article that I just revamped on color coding your calendar and the different calendars you may want to create. But I'm curious, what's your perspective on this and how do you implement this? Is your calendar paper-based or is it digital? And what sorts of things go on your calendar? And then how does that help you the next day?
Sure. I've gone back and forth with multiple calendars. I had a professional one and then the family. And then I had one for each of my kids to take care of, you know, their extracurricular activities. But at this point, I'm using Google Calendar. I just have the one calendar and literally everything goes on there. And what I like to do is first thing in the morning, part of my morning routine, we'll talk about this a little later in this episode, is I'll grab my phone usually or the computer and just see what's up for today. Of course, I did this the night before, so I'm just sort of reinforcing in the morning. But I love to see what I need to do related to work, related to kids, related to family, any side gigs type of thing. So I know what's on task, on tap for tomorrow. And that might inform things like prepping my gear or what my MIT should be, that sort of thing. I picked up this habit a few years ago, the first time I read Getting Things Done, actually, and it stuck because it's been very, very beneficial. Like, I hate being in the car and remembering, oh, I was supposed to do this thing when I'm on the highway and unable to do anything about it. But when I look at my calendar the night before and then again in the morning, I really eliminate that that problem.
Nice. Yeah, my version of that, I guess, is going somewhere and then having to later in the day go back to the same area. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the times I'm working from home all day. So if I have to get in the car and drive somewhere, you know, it's not every day that I have to do that. And it's really frustrating to me when I don't think ahead and I go to the other side of town because I have to pick something up and then I get home and then I find out, oh, I was supposed to pick up something else from the store and I completely forgot. So knowing those things ahead of time and eliminating the additional travel time is really important for me.
Absolutely.
I'm curious for the meetings and things that you have then with the one calendar, who has access to those? Like, do you put family things on there? Is it just work things? Or how do you go about putting the big rocks on your right calendar, so to speak?
Well, I guess I'm in the situation where I don't really have to share a calendar. So I'm not worried about, say, a colleague seeing my daughter's ballet class schedule. You know, I know that a lot of listeners are probably not in that situation. And if you do have to share a calendar, you might not, you know, some stuff to be on there. So I guess because I'm in the situation where I don't have to share, I put everything in one spot. But I know that probably won't work for everybody.
Nice. But the big thing, I think, is just making sure that the important things are on your calendar and that you are looking at them the night before. Is that
fair
to say?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Regardless of how many calendars you want to or need to have, make sure you look at them and see what you've got on the docket for tomorrow.
Well, that could be a whole topic, huh? How do you use your calendar?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got the article that I wrote, and I was surprised when I dug into that, how many words that ended up being. It was quite a bit more effort than I anticipated I was going to put into it, and it will probably make its way onto the podcast and maybe even a dojo course at some point.
Great.
Thanks to Weebly for supporting the Productivity Show. With Weebly, you don't just get great-looking online store templates. You get all the tools you need to build your brand and promote your products, all in one package designed to turn your idea into a thriving online business. Plus, they've got an incredible customer success team. No scripts, no robots, just friendly experts whose only job is to help you do whatever needs doing. So whether it's lavender biscotti or distressed denim sofas, Weebly helps you turn your idea into a powerful online store. because success isn't just getting your products online, it's getting them in the hands of a customer who will love them. As a fan of the Productivity Show, go to Weebly.com/TPS and you'll get 15% off your Weebly online store. That's Weebly.com/TPS. All right, so we've prepared for our productive day. We've gotten enough sleep. We've practiced our gratitude. We've closed up shop. We've identified our MITs. We've prepped our gear. We've looked at our calendar. We go to bed. We are ready to hit the ground running. Let's talk about how to have a productive morning. What should we do to get off on the right foot?
Absolutely. I'm become more and more of a morning person because I have the most energy and I have the most drive and I'm ready to go when that happens. So the first thing I like to do is wake up early. Now, my definition of early might be different than anyone else listening, depending on what they do for a living. I usually wake up around 6. That gives me about an hour before I have to worry about getting the kids up and off to school. I like that time, again, where I don't feel rushed or hurried. I don't feel like I'm making a decision and I'm ready to go for the day. So I love to wake up early.
Awesome. And I wake up about 6 a.m. as well. I've tried to wake up earlier for a period. I was getting up at 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. But I've found that you really need to trial and error this and figure out what is practical for you. So for example, my family, we have church on Wednesday nights. We don't get home until sometimes after 9 p.m. and then getting 5 kids in bed. Like, there's no way we're going to bed before 10.
No, it's not going to happen.
So that makes getting up really early a little bit of a challenge. Now, you know, maybe you could do that. You could say, well, it's just that one day, you don't need quite as much sleep. I've mentioned on the podcast before, I've actually been diagnosed with epilepsy. So one of the things that can trigger a seizure is not enough sleep. Oh. And so I'm pretty militant about getting enough sleep and then also protecting the quality of my sleep. Mm-hmm. But the important thing here is, like you said, just look for even a little bit of time, even an hour makes mm-hmm. a huge difference. If you can get up an hour earlier than everybody else in your house and have that little bit of quiet time, that can really get you off on the right foot.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said trial and error, because I want to mention that again here. If you're getting up, if your AM routine now has you getting up on more of a tight schedule, and you might think, oh, maybe I'll try to push it half an hour earlier or an hour earlier. I've tried to do that too, where I tried to get up at 5 and I jumped right into 5 a.m. and it lasted 2 days and I just couldn't do it. So you have to learn what's actually practical for you, because while your mind might want to do that, your body might not. I also think I made a mistake by just setting my alarm for an hour earlier right off the bat. Maybe if I did 10 minutes and then 10 minutes and then 10 minutes, it might have worked a little bit better. So you could be full of ambition and good intentions and get up at the crack of dawn and hit the ground running, but notice what happens, plan to do it the right way. And if your body says no, don't be distraught. Listen to your body and try something else.
Yeah. I forget who it was, but basically the saying goes, the road to ruin is paved with good intentions or something like that.
Yes.
Like, if you are trying to get up at 5 a.m. because you heard somebody super successful does it that way, mm-hmm. and your body is telling you, like, this isn't going to work because you can't go to bed early enough to get enough sleep, you
right.
definitely need to listen to those warning signs. So productivity is really just adjust and repair, figure out the things that are going to work. Principle here, though, still is true, regardless of what time you wake up. Get up a little bit earlier. And then the second one here is have a morning routine. Now, we're big on morning routines. We call them rituals here at Asian Deficiency. But mm-hmm. why don't you talk to us a little bit about your morning routine and what sorts of things we should include in a morning routine?
Sure. I love routine when it comes to work and when it comes to just maintaining a productive life. So I do the same things every morning, and I can tell you a little bit about what they are. And now I feel comfortable going into my day, but it also sort of cues me that it's work time. You know, like you don't feel like going to the gym until you put on your workout clothes and you feel like going to the gym. The same thing for me is with the routine. When I start with my routine, my mind knows, okay, it's a work day. It's time to get to work. So I get up, like I said, nice and early. Everyone else is asleep, so I have the quiet house all to myself. I'll usually go downstairs, make some tea. I'll drink my sort of tea quietly and just sort of be quiet for maybe 15 or 20 minutes. After that's done, I'll come and look at the calendar and see what's up for the day. I'll just confirm in my own mind that I'm ready for all of those things. And at that point, I'll hit the shower and shave and get dressed and all that sort of thing. Then I'll have something really small to eat. And then at that point, I'm getting the kids and everyone up and ready for the day. So that's really what I do in the morning. I also want to point out what I don't do in the morning. I don't grab my phone and I don't look at email yet. I don't check social channels at this point, only because I know myself and I know if I read an email, I'll want to respond to it. And I know if I look at Twitter, then I'll think, I'll look at Facebook and I'll look at Instagram. So I don't do those things just because I know myself and I'll follow the rabbit hole. But long as I stick to the routine I described here, I usually have a really good, productive day.
Yeah, email in particular. I mean, I read and I can't find the study right now, but it showed that over 50% of millennials will grab their smartphone before they even get out of bed. And the problem with doing that is you open up your email app and you see something that you have to take care of at the office. Maybe it's something that is negative. You know, now you're freaking out about that thing and you're dreading having to deal with it by the time you get to the office, but there's literally nothing you can do about it until you get there.
Right.
So you sabotage the 2-3 hours, whatever you have before you go to the office. And now you get there and you feel stressed and it just makes everything harder. You know, worrying about that problem isn't going to make it any better when you get to the office and you have to deal with it. So I've learned just don't even go there. Yeah. My morning routine is a little bit different. And that's really the cool thing about these morning routines and morning rituals is figure out the things that are going to make the biggest positive impact in your life and then do those every single day. So you can define for yourself what those are, and it doesn't have to take a lot of time. You know, it could take an hour. It could take, if you don't have a morning routine, you could just add one or two of these things and do it for 20 or 30 minutes and you'd still start to see some immense benefits. I tend to wake up, first thing I do is I grab my Bible and I'll read that for about 10, 15 minutes. Then I will pray and I will meditate. I'll do some stretching. I actually have an inversion table in our bedroom because I've had some sciatic nerve issues and I find that using that really helps me out a lot. And then I will shower and get ready. And once I'm done, then I will make my coffee kind of as a reward because I'm definitely a coffee snob. I've got a coffee robot now, but it does the whole, you know, pour over method. And yeah, so that's kind of my little reward for taking action on my morning routine. And I can't even explain in words what a positive impact that has. Like, you don't really realize it. But the fact that you establish a discipline and you stick with it, it's almost like you begin to trust yourself more.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you have more credibility in your own eyes, which is great. I mean, you want to have credibility in other people's eyes as well, but don't undervalue the fact that when you say you want to do something, that you internally really believe that you can achieve it. Like, there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, well, you're making an agreement with yourself, aren't you? Like, imagine if someone said, hey, I'll meet you at 5 o'clock at Starbucks and we'll have that meeting. And then 5 and then 5:15 and 5:30 and 6 roll around and they haven't showed up. I mean, how do you feel? You feel upset. You feel betrayed. You feel, why did this person show up? But the same thing happens when you break an agreement with yourself. And the opposite is true, too. Like you said, when you do perform that routine every day and you do everything, you're reaffirming every now and then every day with yourself, hey, I'm a trustworthy person. I follow through with what I say I'm going to do. And that's a very powerful thing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, you can project that on other people. Like you mentioned, you make an agreement with somebody that they're going to meet you early and then they don't show up. And you immediately think to yourself in that scenario, well, this person is not a person who honors their word. But if you apply, like, even if you don't actually say that about yourself, you have this inner self-talk and you're basically saying the same thing. And you're saying, I'm not a person whose word can be trusted, in essence. And from there, it's a slippery slope, because if you can't trust what you say, then you can't trust yourself to follow through on these things. You can set goals and you really don't believe that you're going to achieve them, because you know you can't even follow through on your morning routine. How can you be trusted to achieve this big goal?
Right.
And so those little things, just making sure that you execute every single day, and the consistency, that's really where the value is. One of the things you have on here, I've tried this. It is no longer part of my morning routine, but I'm curious if you've tried this. That's the whole idea of morning pages.
I did try it. I didn't last for very long. I gave it a week. But again, you know, you try things and see how they take to you. But it is an interesting idea. So the idea is, when you first wake up in the morning, have some paper and a pen there. This is meant to be done analog. And just begin writing, and write enough to fill several pages. It doesn't have to be a particular topic or theme, just sort of stream of consciousness, whatever you want to do. Just get this writing habit established. And every morning you wake up and just write and write and write until you filled the number of pages, and then go off. I guess the idea was to sort of wake up your creativity and creative energy along with your body in the morning. I tried it for a while. I'm not a person who's good at stream of consciousness, if that makes any sense. I end up just writing a couple sentences and I'm sitting there thinking, boy, I don't know what to write about. So it was a practice that I tried. I do see the value in it, but it wasn't for me. But if that's something that one of the listeners wants to try, I encourage you, go right ahead and give it a shot.
Yeah, I tried this for a little while also, and I definitely saw the value in it. I tried it probably for about a month. And so I got to the point where, like you at the beginning, the stream of conscious stuff was hard for me. But once I got rolling with it, it did get easier. And I did see the benefit of the... It comes from The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, and she recommends that you do it paper pen and you fill up 3 pages. The thing for me was, the 3 pages took a really long time. It was like an hour worth of writing every single day. And I could see how it kind of like primed the pump for everything else that I was going to do that day. But I don't spend enough of my day in that creative mode for that 1 hour time investment to really pay off, which is why I kind of gave up on this. But it's definitely an interesting exercise, and I would definitely recommend that people try it and see if it works for you.
Yep, for sure. Give it a shot.
All right. Next one is eat your frog, or your most important tasks. This is something that comes from Brian Tracy, and really even before him, Mark Twain. We've talked about this a lot on Asian Deficiency, and I think you even had it in another one of your video courses. But just real briefly, what does it mean to eat your frog, and what's the value of doing this early in the day?
Sure. Well, I think Twain said something like, I'm going to get it, to paraphrase, that if you first thing you do in the morning is eat a live frog, you will have done the most difficult thing you're going to do all day. So the idea is, what's the task, and you know what it is, that you're putting off, or that you're not looking forward to doing for whatever reason. Do that first, and get it done with and out of the way. And the rest of your day is going to be easy street. Like you mentioned, reading that unpleasant email first thing in the morning and having to wait that hour before you can actually do anything about it. This is sort of blowing that up. So you have the very large, unwieldy, or for whatever reason, unpleasant task waiting for you. And as long as you keep putting it off, because it is so unpleasant, you're just extending the misery, if you will. Whereas if you did that thing right off the bat and just took care of it, now you're on easy street for the rest of the day. So the idea is to attack that unwieldy task first thing and have it done and over with.
Yeah, I think from the productivity perspective, a lot of people will procrastinate on the things that are going to be the biggest drivers of their future success, because they'll project that it's going to be a lot worse than it really is. And so when it comes to eating your frog and doing your most important tasks, the idea here is to leverage the fact that at the beginning of your day, you do have the most willpower and the most mental energy available to direct at this thing. And then when you do that, you can go through the rest of your day knowing that at least I got this thing done, which is why looking at those emails at the beginning of your day is so deadly, because you can have a lot of willpower, a lot of mental energy ready to be devoted to your most important task, the thing that's really going to move the needle. And then you open up your email and you see that negative message, and now all of that is out the window. There's no way you're going to do anything here. And, you know, if you had not looked at that email and you had done that most important task and you had eaten that frog, by the time you got to the office and you had to deal with that negative situation, it's almost like, hey, whatever, it doesn't matter, because at least I did that other thing, which was really important.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly right.
Nice. And so there's different ways that you can implement this. Put in the notes here, the Asian efficiency workflow, which is basically, if you're going to use a digital task manager, the night before, you had mentioned you're going to identify your MITs, so the frogs that you want to eat. And you can really implement this in any different task manager by simply flagging the items that you want to work on the next day. And then when you wake up, you go into your task manager, you look just at the flagged items. You don't look at the big list of everything that you need to do, just the things that are going to be most important. And then you focus on those first. So that would be the way to implement the Asian efficiency workflow if you wanted to do this using a digital task manager. But you don't have to. You could use paper and pen as well.
Sure, whatever works.
All right. Then the last one here is chunk your time. So what do you mean when you say chunk your time?
This is, again, something I picked up a very long time ago that has paid huge dividends for me. I like to say that, well, when I'm working, I'll look at how much time and effort and energy it takes to perform a certain task. And I'll actually record that. And then, I'll also note when I have the most time and effort and energy available during the day. And when the day's done, I'll sort of match those things up. Like if this task takes this amount of time and this amount of energy and I have to do it often, then I'll schedule it for that time. Or if these tasks, like reviewing my MITs or going through emails or whatever it is, doesn't require a whole lot of mental energy or physical energy, then I'll reserve it for the end of the day when I'm a little more spent. And by setting those little chunks up, if you will, like that, it makes for a much more productive and successful day.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for batching your tasks like that.
Yeah.
I think that you lose a lot of the efficiency and you make things a lot harder when you try to switch back and forth all the time between something where you don't need a lot of energy, like replying to email, and then something where you do need a lot of energy, like working on a big project. And I know we're going to talk about multitasking in the next section here, but it's really not multitasking. It's context switching. It's going back and forth between those things all the time. And if you think about that, where you're constantly changing your focus or your attention back and forth between a bunch of different things, that can drain your mental energy pretty quickly as well. I read a book recently called Busy by Tony Crabb, and he talked a little bit about the number of distractions that people have to deal with. And he basically said that we suck at estimating how many distractions we really have to overcome. He said that according to one study, people thought that they switched their focus about every 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. But he said that when they watched the people's eyes, they actually switched about every 14 seconds. So,
oh my goodness.
Oh, it was a Boston College study. You know, we underestimate our frequency of distraction by a factor of 10.
Oh my gosh.
And that's probably, you know, exponentially higher if you have your email client open at the same time you're trying to do
absolutely,
actual work.
Yes. Wow. That's an amazing statistic.
Yeah. So protect your mornings. Your mornings are the very best of what you're going to be able to devote to what you want to get done in that particular day. And so other than setting yourself up for success by prepping the night before, this is the most important thing you can do to get your day moving in the right direction, is to make sure that you're getting up on time, you have a solid morning routine, and you're chunking your time and you're devoting the very best of your mental resources towards eating those frogs. Now, in the next section here, we've got some tips on overcoming a midday slump. I think this is a great section. So there's some great tips in here, and I want to dive into these. So what's the number one thing we can do to overcome a midday slump?
Boy, the midday slump can be so vicious. You just had lunch and you're feeling all cozy with your warm belly, and next thing you know, you don't want to do any work. So you might jump right into it. And you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but multitasking. I think my best tip is don't. I guess there's this image of the productive person who's taking a phone call and responding to an email and jotting something down all at once. And that's presented as like an enviable way to work, when really I think it's the wrong way to work, frankly. When you're doing three things, I think you're doing three things sort of poorly, or at least mediocre, as opposed to doing one thing very, very well. So I would say just avoid multitasking. Forget those images of the super productive person who can balance 100 things at one time. Just do what you're doing and do that.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about the people who are quote unquote super successful, the people who make things specifically that you're just like, oh, they're an amazing artist, or they're an amazing writer, or just really like this thing that this person made, the things that are impressive, they're something that you focus so intently on for so long, and it's a labor of love. You know, I hate that term passion project, because basically what it means now is that people want you to work on it for free, especially if you're a freelancer. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, I'll pay you in social media shares or something, but that's that's not really that valuable. But it's like you're so focused on, I have to get this thing done. And that's really, you know, if you were to dissect the word passion, it comes from the Latin word pati, which means to suffer. It's like, this thing is so important to me that I am willing to suffer to see it come about. I'm willing to say no to all these other things that maybe are good,
yeah,
but they're not the best thing, just so that I can accomplish this one thing, which, you know, is of highest priority. That word priority too, I think it was essentialism. Greg McKeown talks about how up until the 20th century or something, that was a singular word. And then the Industrial Revolution, people decided that they could actually accomplish multiple priorities. And he's like, that's garbage. You have to focus on the one thing. It literally means like the most important thing. So you can't have multiple most important things.
No, you really can't.
Yeah, so I'll get off my multitasking soapbox now. Next one you've got here is the Pomodoro method. Now, Pomodoro method is something that we really love at Asian Efficiency. We actually just had I think it was Rudy Marsh, the owner or founder of the Essington Glass. He was on episode 188 to talk about Pomodoro 2.0 in essence. But why don't you give us just a real brief overview of what the Pomodoro method is and maybe how you use it?
Sure. It's a way to formally define periods of work and periods of break. So what you would do is set up a timer and work for 25 minutes straight. At the end of those 25 minutes, you take a break for 15 minutes. And during those 15 minutes, you do anything other than work. Look out the window, play with the dog, whatever you like to do. Then when the 15 minutes are up, you begin another 25-minute work block. Sorry, everybody. I'm jumping ahead of myself. First block is you work for 25 minutes and you take a break for 5. Then 25 minutes, and then 5, and do that 3 times. The third break is 15 minutes long. I'm trying to give everyone an excessive break, Mike.
So right.
I've been doing this for years and years and years, and I really love it because it forces me to focus in work. It has a built-in sort of reward. I know at the end of this 25-minute work period, I get a little break, and I can do something that I want to do. And then after I've done that 3 times, I get a little longer break. The break is a nice little incentive when I want to stop, but I know I just keep going. But it also gives me time to step away from what I'm ever doing and process it a little bit. I'm sure there's been a time where you or your listeners have been working on a project and you feel a little too close to it, and all you really need is just some time away, and you can come back and start fresh, and sometimes solutions reveal themselves that way. So a simple timer will do it. You can use a timer app. You can use a kitchen timer if you like. Whatever you will work for you. But I think it's great. I've been using it for a very long time.
Awesome. Yeah. Katie had mentioned in the dojo chat going back to the multitasking thing, what do you guys suggest for someone who's tried to not multitask but finds that they take too long on a project or task if they single focus on it longer than they need to in order to do a good job and make progress? And this is the thing I would start with. Katie specifically, I think, maybe is familiar with the Pomodoro method, but if you need a little bit of help getting off of the multitasking train, then something like the Pomodoro method is great. Because you can set that timer and you can say, I'm just going to work on this one thing for 25 minutes. And because you're setting that 25 minute timer, you know that the world's not going to end in those 25 minutes if you turn off all the other potential distractions. And then you get done with those 25 minutes, you see how much progress you made on your project and you're like, wow, I killed it. And you want to keep going.
Yeah, the reinforcement's really built right in when you, it's amazing what you can get done when you've made that agreement with yourself. I'm only going to work on X for the next 25 minutes. And when that timer sounds off, I've had this experience, and I bet Kate would too. You look back and think, wow, that was really effective. I'm motivated to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we have in the dojo is a discount on that Essington timer, which I mentioned a little bit earlier. It's a glass, like hourglass type Pomodoro timer. And one of the things that I like about this specifically, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend it for somebody in Katie's situation, but if you are using the Pomodoro method to overcome procrastination, just start on projects, I find this really effective because there isn't like a timer that goes off. It's not blaring at you that, okay, your Pomodoro is done now. You flip the hourglass over and then you start working. You hear the sand going through the hourglass as you start working, and then you get absorbed in your project. And it doesn't take a very long time to get into what you're working on, but then you don't have to stop at that 25 minutes. You can just kind of let that go till a logical breaking point, which kind of leads into your next point here, this 52-17.
Yeah, the 52-17. Now imagine you're trying the Pomodoro method, maybe Kate's giving it a shot. And I've had people say this to me where they sort of resent the end of that 25-minute work block because I feel like I'm in the zone. I feel like I'm doing great and I don't want to take a break at this point. There are a lot of people who feel this way. And in fact, it encouraged a group to do a study about when people would naturally take breaks after a period of focused work. And it turned out that the majority of people in this study worked for 52 minutes on average naturally and then took a break of about 17 minutes. And so that's where the 52-17 comes from. You work for 52 minutes straight and then you take a break for 17. And again, what you do during your break is up to you, but the idea it is something other than what you had been doing during the work block. So if you're using Pomodoro and you think, oh, I don't want to stop working, I feel like I'm really on to something here, or it just feels sort of off to you to sit idle for that 5 minutes and twiddle your thumbs, try 52-17. Work for 52 minutes and take a break for 17 minutes, and maybe that'll work a little better for you.
Yeah, and so the Essington timer I mentioned earlier, that soft stop, that kind of implements this without being so rigid or specific. So
yeah,
if you don't want to track specifically a 17 minute break, you know, you don't have to do that. The important thing is just that, okay, I'm starting a work session now and I'm going to use something that's going to allow me to focus only on the task at hand. And I'm going to do this for as long as I really can or should. And so if you need something that's going to keep it small, then use a actual timer.
Yeah.
If you just need something to help you get started, then something like the Essington glasses is a great tool.
Great.
Next one we've got here is tracking your time. I'm curious, what do you do to track your time?
Well, I've got to say this is entirely analog. There is a person I know who lives up in New Hampshire, David Say. You can find him at davidseah.com. He produces all sorts of paper productivity tools. The one I'm absolutely in love with, and I mentioned this in the video module in the dojo, is called the Emergent Task Planner. So basically, it's a list where you write down what you're going to work on for the day. And then next to each one is a series of little bubbles. Each bubble represents 15 minutes. So what I do, let's say I have write a first draft as one of my tasks for the day. I'll sort of estimate next to the bubble how long I think it'll take. Let's just say an hour. And then I'll begin working. And then when I'm done, I'll note how long it actually took. Maybe it took 90 minutes. And when this happens, I'll continue to do this with tasks throughout the day. And then after a week or so, maybe 2 weeks, I'll notice a pattern. This takes this much time on average. This particular piece of work takes this much time on average. And now I know how long things take. And to go back to something we said earlier, when you have time, effort, and energy available, it allows me to sort those things or batch them properly. So it's very analog, but for me, I found it to be really, really helpful.
Yeah, and there's definitely a whole portion of the productivity community that just loves analog productivity. We've got a course on that in the dojo. So I'm not knocking the analog stuff. If that's what works for you, then that's great. I personally can't do that because I don't think about it. So I need something that's going to just be automatic. Mm-hmm. I can't even use something like Toggle where you start and stop the timers because I would start a timer and then forget to turn it off. And now I'm like halfway to a different location. And right. then I remember, oh yeah, I started that timer and I forgot to stop it. And now all my numbers are off. So the thing that I use is Timing, which is a Mac app. And I think there's other applications that you could use as well. Maybe Rescue Time for PC users. I've used that previously. But what I like about Timing is that it is a standalone application that runs in the background on your Mac and you never have to think about it. It just is going to tell you where you're spending your time and you can choose how to rate the different applications that you might spend time in from very unproductive to very productive. And you can go into Timing and see that, yeah, you spent 8 hours on your Mac yesterday and you got a 75% productive score because you spent, you know, 2 hours on in Twitterific, and that's not actually productive. But the time that you spent in Ulysses, that was very productive. And there's actually, if you wanted to buy this outright, you can do that. There is a discount in the dojo. It's also a part of the SetApp service. I love SetApp. I can't talk highly enough about that. I mentioned Ulysses. Ulysses is actually its own subscription plan. Now I think it's like $5 a month if you were to buy Ulysses or subscribe to Ulysses. But SetApp is only $10 a month. At least it was when I signed up. I know they're trying out some different price points. But even so, I think the other one was $15 a month. Even at $15 a month, I think it's if you're going to use more than a couple of the apps that they have in there, then it's going to be a very worthwhile service. So it's got Ulysses, it's got Timing, and it's got a bunch of other great productivity apps. If you didn't want to spend a whole bunch of money to buy them outright, you could give SetApp a shot.
Yeah, for sure. I would say definitely give it a try.
All right, last one here for overcoming a midday slump. And I think this is something that probably everybody is going to gravitate towards when they are in a midday slump.
Yeah, I'm going to say it is stay out of your email. Because isn't it tempting to sort of go and take a look? This is a piece of advice that I got from David Sparks over at Max Sparky years ago, where he said, my number one productivity tip is to turn off your email client. For me, it's like, you know, the siren is pulling ships into the rocks. I want to go and look and see what's in there. But turning it off and really setting specific times to go and look at email during the day has been a real lifesaver for me, because otherwise I'll just sit there and click and read and respond.
Yeah. And it's easy to do that because email is a part of just about everybody's work, but the percentage of actual work that happens in email is not very high, in my opinion.
That's true.
Now, maybe you do spend a lot of time collaborating on important projects via email, and then you're the outlier and, you know, great. Good job for you. But most people I know, they go in there because they're looking for something that they can do that's easy, that's quote unquote work related, but it's really not moving the needle. And then also a lot of times the expectations that around email are not managed very well. So maybe you've got one boss or manager somewhere who just always expects an immediate response to the messages that they send you because you've never had that conversation about the actual work that you're supposed to be doing that mm-hmm. you're getting paid to do. and you know, they send you an email once a week or every other week, but then they chastise you when you don't respond right away. Well, what's that going to do? It's going to ingrain behavior where you're constantly checking because you don't want to miss anything.
Right.
I think it's kind of like, I forget the science behind this, but that variable reward scenario, basically what it does is it creates that compulsion. If you knew that every time you went into your email, that good or bad, that certain things were going to be there, it would be a lot easier to manage those expectations. But because you're not sure what you're going to see, you feel like you have to keep checking it all the time. And that can be very deadly to your productivity.
Yeah, it really is a productivity killer because it's a time killer. And next thing you know, your time's gone and your opportunity to get something done is gone with it.
All right, so we have made it all the way through our productive day. And whether we've executed on our plan perfectly or not, what do we do at the end of the day here?
Well, the end of the day, we're almost at the back of the beginning of the episode, aren't we? So the first thing I like to do is reflect on the day. What went well? What were those wins we talked about earlier? It's also important to look at what did not go well as long as you extract the lesson. When something didn't go well, can you figure out why did it not go well? Can you identify what could I do next time to make it more successful? And then can I implement that lesson tomorrow or the next time I'm in that same situation? So those are really the first couple things I always do. What were the wins I got from today? What did not go as planned? And is there a lesson in that failure that I can apply to next time?
Yeah, when I went through and I reviewed the videos that you had created, I implemented this a little bit different, but what you had put in this last video really got me thinking. Like you can go through your day and you can execute and you can go through the motions, mm-hmm. but really what you want to do is you want to be learning how to do this even better. So that could be identifying the things that should be cut out, or it could be identifying ways to streamline your processes. But the way that I implemented this was adding a question to my journaling template: what did I get out of today? So not just going through the day, but understanding and learning something from the day and extracting that and applying that going forward. I thought that was a great, great way that you described that.
Yeah. Is there that lesson? Can I identify the lesson and apply it to the next day or the next time to make it even better?
So we've gone all the way through this outline, and I think now at this point you should have a pretty good idea of the things that you can do to set your day up for success, and then also how to execute. And then at that point, you know, once you've got it for a particular day, kind of like you said, it's rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
But creating this consistent habit, this will make a huge impact on your productivity, and it will make you a lot less stressed. In my opinion, doing this myself, I've noticed that it makes me a lot less stressed about the things that I have to do, and I feel like I have a lot more control over my day. If you were to say just one or two things that people should do like right now, what would you recommend for people who just want to get started with this? I feel like there's absolutely nothing they can do every single day. Their day just spins out of control. They feel helpless. Mm-hmm. Where should they start?
Well, I was going to say, if there's something you want to do, let's say tomorrow, that you can even implement tonight, I think for me, the biggest thing is writing down those important tasks that need to get done. Because when things are routinely spiraling out of control, I would guess that maybe you're sort of reacting versus being proactive about your day. You're just sort of putting out fires left and right as opposed to executing a plan. So that's really the number one thing I would say is to do before you go to bed tonight, or even after you're done listening to this episode. Think about what you have open. Think about what's most important, write them down, and have them ready to go in the morning. Beyond that, I would say try to establish a routine. If you don't have a routine right now, or if that's new to you, take it slow. Don't worry about being, uber productive or Mr. Routine or Mrs. Routine as of tomorrow morning, but start to think about what are some things I can set up for myself the night before? What are some things I can do each day to gain a little more control out of my spiraling day and build upon those successes?
Yeah, don't try to implement all the great habits all at once.
Right.
It's not going to work. Just pick one thing, master that, get it ingrained, and then add another thing. So great advice, Dave. Where can people go if they want to connect with you?
If you want to connect with me on Twitter, I am at David Kalo. That's David C-A-O-L-O. And if you want to visit the website, you can do at 52tiger.net. That's numeral 52tiger.net.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Dave.
Thanks for having me. It was great fun.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and you now know some specific things that you can do today, right now, to make sure that tomorrow is as awesome and productive as you dream it will be. But if you want to go even deeper on this topic and get access to the awesome video course that Dave created for only $1, then I have a very special offer for you. As a podcast listener who's serious about taking your productivity to the next level, you can get access to not only the Setting Your Day Up for Success video course, but all of the video courses that the dojo has to offer for only $1 for your first month. But this offer is just for podcast listeners, so if you want to take advantage of this very special offer, you have to go to theproductivityshow.com/dojo. You'll get access to the entire dojo, including the private video training library, as well as the awesome community, which can help hold you accountable for reaching your goals, and direct access to myself, Brooks Tan, and the rest of the Asian Efficiency team. But that special $1 for your first month offer is only available at theproductivityshow.com/dojo. Again, that URL is theproductivityshow.com/dojo. You can also find links to everything we discussed today in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/196. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us an iTunes review or a star in Overcast. It really helps us out and helps other people find out about the show. The show is on Twitter as @productivityfm. And if you want to get your questions answered to get mentioned on the show, you can send us a tweet with the hashtag AskTPS. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.